We have now one. This is now the end of what's described as the main meeting. There's one final session on the agenda, which is described as an optional update session, implying that everything else you've done today has been compulsory, of course, which I'm not sure that's the case. But I'm proposing that we go straight into that in the interest of time. But again, it is optional. It's an optional update around applying IFRS standards in 2020 and particularly issues around COVID-19. So if anyone wishes to finish and we'll say our farewells, that's absolutely fine. If not, we'll go straight into the COVID-19 presentation, which I will just pull up on the screen, if I bear with me for one moment. Which hopefully is there now. So, let me just summarize really the overview of what the board has done in this space. So it's really in three key areas. So first of all, we've looked to support consistent application in light of what's happening with the pandemic. Secondly, we've updated some of our timelines, and I'll talk you through those in further detail in a moment. And thirdly, we've sought to make ourselves available to all of our stakeholders. And there's been an awful lot of engagement that's gone on virtually, of course, through the course of these last few months. In addition to that, we've been monitoring the situation very closely and related to COVID, and perhaps having one or two requests come into us quite early, particularly around IFRS 9 and IFRS 16. I would say the position beyond that is that it's been relatively quiet in terms of what we've heard from preparers and from users on this. That's not to say it will necessarily stay that way, but that's certainly the current situation. So let me just walk you through those three areas. So first of all, in terms of supporting application, you know, our focus has been, again, in responding to urgent issues and trying to ensure consistent application. And if there is a need for urgent standard setting, seeing that we can react to that, but it's sticking to our due process, of course. And so we've done a few things here. By way of example, we put out some educational material very early on, before the end of March, around the application of IFRS 9, particularly in relation to expected credit losses. And that highlighted the importance of using all reasonable and supportable information, for instance, when determining lifetime losses, and also reminding our stakeholders that IFRS 9 doesn't provide bright lines. It's not a mechanistic approach to accounting for credit losses. So going back to thinking about that support, reasonable and supportable information in considering the application of the expected credit loss. And since then, we've been monitoring interim disclosures by banks quite closely. In a similar vein, we provided some educational material around the application of IFRS 16. And again, that was done quite early on. And following on from that, we passed a narrow scope amendment to IFRS 16, which came into place at the end of May. And I think this reflected a combination of things. Clearly, IFRS 16 is a relatively new standard. And it became clear that lessees were facing a very significant number of rent concessions or potential rent concessions where they would have to assess whether these were defined in terms of the standards as a lease modification or not. And just give the volume, the likely volume of these concessions, the board has offered a practical relief. To assuming over a period of time, if a rate concession simply relates to COVID-19 for no other reason, that you don't have to consider that as a lease modification. And so it's trying to streamline and make the accounting more straightforward. Within that, we've provided some additional disclosures for users to try and give them some full information around that, the impact of that particular practical expedient. I don't believe that has been adopted yet by the EU, but ESMA wrote to national regulators suggesting that they shouldn't pursue regulatory action if companies chose to take advantage of the practical expedient. And the FCA in the UK confirmed that they wouldn't take regulatory action on this. Clearly, the UK is still subject to IFRS as adopted in the EU until the end of the financial year. And then just before we move on to the second and third aspects, I think it's just worth reflecting on. Last week, we had our conference, combined two of the IFRS conferences for the year. And in that, we had a panel discussion around COVID-19. Florin from CMAC was a member of that panel. And I just wanted to give you a few key takeaways from that panel discussion. I think probably the most important one was from a user perspective that understanding and ensuring that assumptions are updated is absolutely key, and having clarity over the assumptions that a company is using. At the same time, it was felt to be entirely valid for companies, even companies operating in the same sector, to have different macroeconomic assumptions. There is no requirements from our standards or even investors driving preparers to have the same assumptions. I suspect outliers will always come under scrutiny, but I think the most important thing is to understand those assumptions, and again, for those assumptions to be up to date and to be based on reasonable and supportable information. And finally, to see that those assumptions are flow through into both business decisions and how those may be reported on, perhaps in management commentary, but also in the financial statements. And the sense I think we had from the panel, whether it be users or auditors or other members of the panel, was this, you know, could then form the basis of a proper and informed conversation between investors and companies. Having that information, understanding assumptions, the investors may disagree with those assumptions, but at least it formed the basis of a proper dialogue in that respect. So I think that was a very interesting panel discussion. I don't know if Florin has anything to add later on. I mentioned the second area was to look at our current work plan and to decide what we really needed to focus on as a board. The issue isn't so much the board's time, it's really the time of our stakeholders. As you know, with our due process requires a lot of consultation, outreach to stakeholders, comment letters from stakeholders, garnering stakeholder views in whatever is the most effective manner. And we felt we had to be very careful of understanding the pressures both on investors and companies at this time, that we didn't overburden them. So we decided to focus on what we thought were the most urgent and time-sensitive projects. So two projects in particular, the first being those related to the reform of IBOR and the effect that has on financial reporting. And so those amendments were produced and published at the end of August, it says expected on this slide. And secondly, the amendments to IFRS 17 came out in June. So those were those urgent areas. And then we looked at what we had in the pipeline. You'll know that we extended the consultation period both for primary financial statements and for the discussion paper on business combinations. The latter is open for comment until the end of the year. And for a number of our other projects, we shifted out our timetables on those just to try and spread those out a little more. There is still quite a weight of consultations and exposure drafts and discussion papers on the way, and also including the agenda consultation and a PIR post-implementation review of IFRS 10, 11 and 12. So there is a weight, and we're cognizant of the burden potentially that does put on stakeholders. And then lastly, on this chart, there was some bundling of some narrow scope amendments to try and make life a little easier for preparers, and a deferral of a classification or a clarification around the classification of liabilities as current or non-current, which was pushed back by a year. And then I think it's been self-evident from the discussions that we've continued to have with both CMAQ and GPF members, and indeed our meeting today, that you know we want to be there and available for stakeholders, thanks to the skills of our IT team. I think just a few days after lockdown was imposed in the UK, we were able to broadcast our March board meeting live as usual. And I think we've had similar experiences to which many of you will have. So for instance, with last week's IFRS conference, much greater reach in terms of the individuals venturing into other time zones where you wouldn't have normally had attendees travel from that part of the world to attend our conference. So a different experience, but still, I think, a rich and valuable experience, certainly for us and hopefully for attendees at our events. And then just finally, just a comment, I won't go through this in detail, but just in the appendix here, this just sets out our current timelines on projects that are live at the moment. I think to this group, the ones which are most interesting, PFS is now closed, as I mentioned, business combinations. I suspect IFRS for small and medium-sized enterprises is probably of less interest. And then we have a number of projects coming in the next few months, some of which are more specialist. So I include in that business combinations under common control. So where there's a common control party between the acquiree and the acquired business, an exposure draft around rate regulated activities, particularly focused on utilities, for instance. But beyond that, there are some other important consultations which have wider application. So I'd particularly flag in that respect the targeted standards level review of disclosures, which is part of our disclosures initiative. Many of you will have been involved in this work before, and this is to try both to see the extent to which our stakeholders and particularly users can have impact and influence in determining disclosure requirements very early in the process, and secondly, to ensure there's better application of materiality in terms of what companies report on. And then we'll also have an exposure draft around our practice statement on management commentary. And finally, I've mentioned it once or twice already, but just to emphasize, it is very important that in March we'll be launching our gender consultation. It's a bit like the Olympics, although it's going to happen in 2021, it's still going to be called 2020, a gender consultation. One thing I learned very soon after joining the board is that actually it's actually quite difficult, if not very difficult, to get something onto the board's agenda if it hasn't come up through the agenda consultation process. Not to say that it doesn't happen, and certainly we look to be responsive, but I think it is a key influencer and determination of the board's work plan, which will run from 2022 to 2026. And so we're clearly very interested in what all our stakeholders think in terms of our work on a go-forward basis. So that's a summary of these issues, and I'm going to stop there and happy to take any questions if anyone has some. So, Florin, you have a question. Go ahead, please.
Interestingly, the consultation document you did not mention so far is the one that got published last week. On the Sustainability Reporting Board. Could you maybe talk us through sort of what was the impetus that persuaded you to draft that paper? Or sort of what was your thinking around it? Yeah.
So I should clear that up. So within the IFRS Foundation, the board is part of, sitting above the board is a group of 24 individuals who are trustees. They're IFRS trustees. And in fact, it's their paper. It's not the board's paper, and that's why it doesn't appear on this list. I may be being pedantic, but indeed, it's not a consultation the board has had a great deal of input into. So this is a, because it's a strategic issue, and what's suggested in that is potentially setting up a sister board to the Accounting Standards Board, a sustainability standards board. So why did the trustees do it? And the trustees, I think, are careful to say that we're not looking for work as an organization. In fact, we would be somewhat cautious if this actually had a detrimental impact on what we have achieved over the last almost 20 years now in terms of financial reporting. But we've been asked to think about, could we get involved in this space by many people and by many organizations. And I think the chairman of our board has talked on a number of occasions about the need for consolidation in this space and a need for standardization in this space. I think, in essence, you know, such were the calls of, could we get involved? Could we bring to bear our due process skills, for instance, around setting standards? Clearly, we've made significant inroads into financial reporting from where we started many years ago. And so it's a request, and really we're now listening to stakeholders in terms of whether they think this is something that we should pursue as an idea, or whether they'd like us to pursue or not. So I think that's, as I say, it's a trustee consultation, and I speak on their behalf. I think that's the genesis of it. I don't know if you have any further questions on that.
No, thanks. I think that was clear.
I see we, Sharif, you have a question.
I just wanted to know if there is any update on financial instruments with characteristics of equity.
Thanks, yes. So at the moment, the board a few months ago started looking at following the feedback to the last consultation document. Are there different approaches that we could take which would perhaps be less radical than had been proposed in the exposure draft. And so there are a series of proposals there and a spectrum of them. And some of those are exploring other things which we can do tactically around IAS 32 to provide some clarifications. I think the one piece from the consultation paper that did provide or receive generally positive feedback was around the disclosure pieces, particularly things like the maximum number of equity shares outstanding, for instance, around terms and conditions of these instruments, around the priority on liquidation. And so at the moment, we are having, not all of those are simple, and we've also heard from preparers that. So we are doing a round of outreach on those, particularly with users, exploring some simplifications to those disclosures that would perhaps make them more manageable from a preparer perspective. Exploring, again, could we use cross-referencing in some of those? Would that work? Because we know some of this information is provided elsewhere. So the board will come back to this in the next few months in terms of clarifying its next steps on FICE. But there has been some work going on behind the scenes.
Thank you.
Thanks. Ian, you'd like to make a comment on COVID?
Yeah, just briefly. I think just to say, very much appreciate the extended deadlines for comments that were made. I think when the restrictions came in, I think most of us struggled with that, working around that. So actually expanding the deadlines was very helpful. We would have struggled to pull comments, constructive comments together in the original timelines. I think certainly from our side, I think a lot of folks have now adjusted to the new normal. So I think there's a lot of important topics here. I wouldn't want COVID to be a sort of permanent excuse for everything to get it. I think we kind of adjusted to it in a way. So I'd encourage that we sort of keep moving. But maybe just one other comment to draw everybody on. And I know I've done this a lot of times in the past, and many preparers are sort of talking about the costs. Bear in mind, a lot of companies, and not just the big companies, the small companies, are sort of, these are quite tough times for business, and IT budgets are under pressure, finance budgets are under pressure. So, you know, if there's something important that we need to do, yeah, we'll do it. But it's maybe a particular time to be cognizant that, you know, the resources for these kind of projects are sort of somewhat limited. So we should sort of make sure that the ones we're prioritizing are really the ones that are really important. And we're not sort of building sort of nice to have requirements at the moment. Thanks.
Thanks, Ian. James.
Hi. Yes, you mentioned, Nick, that you had been reviewing the most recent IFRS 9 disclosures. Are you, do you have a satisfaction from these as a user? I found the bank disclosures patchy on particularly the stage 1, 2, 3 exposures in the interims. I just wondered, do you think that's generally been in the spirit of the standard? Do you have any comments on that, and if anything can be changed?
I think your observation is right that it's been a mixed bag. Really, there's a spectrum there. The underlying issue here is interim reporting and the requirements around interim reporting. I'm not sure that can be changed in the short term. I think again that would be an issue that I'd expect potentially to be flagged through agenda consultation as something asking the board to revisit.
Thanks, that would be good when the time comes. Thank you.
Okay. Florian.
Yeah, this is just an IFRS 9 comment. I think our experience on the IFRS 9 side has been that even if we got detailed information in the interim reporting, and to be honest, I mean, this is about as bad a stress test as a new standard can get, I guess. But the thing that we found is that we found a wide divergence under reserving outcomes, but it was very difficult to find the drivers of that divergence just looking at the standardized disclosures. So if we have, I don't know, unemployment rates 8.6 or 9%, but you know, in sort of best base case assumption, but the banks have double reserving levels at the end, right? And when you talk then to the management, they said, well, these were our assumptions, but then we did a really bottom-up analysis of all our loans on the book, and the outcomes were what they were. So I think, you know, we get a lot of data. I have become somewhat skeptical that all of that is really that useful at this point in time, unfortunately.
So the message I'm getting, it's hard to rationalize the assumptions, perhaps looking at the assumptions together with the shape of someone's loan book with the outcome in terms of what's then written off or moves from one bucket or to another.
Exactly. So from taking the loan book and the assumptions, and then seeing the outcome, there's some sort of disconnect.
Okay. I mean, it's interesting observation. IFRS 9 will be within the next few years up for a post-implementation review. And again, this may be a time to flag this into the mix, certainly. So I don't see any further comments in the chat in terms of anyone else wishing to speak this afternoon, I don't think. So that just leaves me to thank all of you for your contribution today. It's the first time we've ever done a virtual joint CMAC GPF meeting. I think we've got an awful lot out of it, as ever, driven by your insights and perspectives. So thank you very much. But let me just, before we finish, this will be the last meeting for three of our CMAC members in particular. And so I would like to thank them for their contributions over a number of years now. So Glenn, who is one of our current co-chairs of CMAC, who somehow took on the mantle of chairing CMAC or being a co-chair, and because of COVID has managed not to chair any of the meetings over the last year. But Glenn always gives us forthright and interesting comments, as indeed to the two other CMAC members who we are saying goodbye to. So to Marietta, who clearly has a passion for the subject of financial reporting and the interplay between our world and that of accounting, and also for Paul, who always very firmly rooted in, again, the needs of the fundamental investor and a voice of reason in many of our discussions. So we thank you for your contribution over the last few years, and indeed we are going to miss you from our future deliberations. So
thank you very much, Nick.
Thank you, all of you. So with that, let me close the meeting and wish everyone well. Cheerio.